News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Well, one of us is a war hero, Medal of Honor recipient, and national celebrity. The other is a dork. You are stuck with the dork. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome to the show. It is 10 minutes after 5 right now. And what we have been doing so far today. Phil, let me just check something. I should have done this during the break, but I was actually helping Phil find a luthier, somebody who could fix an ancient guitar for a friend of Phil, a 1942 K-Tone acoustic guitar. But I want to let you know that this coming Sunday, the 27th of October, I'm going to do what I did last year. I'm going to come into work on a Sunday night. Will I be paid extra for it? No, I will not. Is it a labor of love? Yes, it is. Next Sunday night, 7 until 10, we're going to do a very special ghost extravaganza. It'll be the Sunday before Halloween, and we will hear your ghost stories on a Sunday night. Now, this will, of course, require that I'm going to have to separate myself from my beloved circle of friends on a Sunday night, but I'm simply going to be with a different circle of friends, you guys on the radio. So get your ghost stories together, and on Sunday night, this coming Sunday, the 27th, by special arrangement with my boss, Tim Wenger, we will do Ghost Stories, a special edition of the program here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Because we had to check the calendar to make sure everything was cool, because sometimes what happens is, as you know, our sister station is the sports station, and we're the news talk station. But sometimes if there are multiple sporting events, what they'll do is they'll move one of the sporting events over to this radio station, and we had to make sure that there wasn't going to be a scheduling conflict. For those of you in Canada, I believe that would be a scheduling conflict. So write it down, make a note to yourself, because I don't want to sit here talking to myself for 3 hours on Sunday. We will do a special ghost program, all 3 hours of your ghost stories, this coming Sunday, the 27th of October, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. right here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Traffic is not pleasant today. And if you see any traffic issues about which we need to know, make sure you text them to Alan Harris at 30930. That's 30930. On a related traffic note, I have not seen the two turkeys at Maple and Flint over the past several days. Those are the turkeys that had been known to frolic in the intersection, particularly during the peak periods of drive time traffic. So my hope is the turkeys are okay, and perhaps they've been captured and moved to a more remote location. I mean, they are fun to watch, but when you're trying to get home and you have to wait for the turkeys to get out of the way, it can slow you up considerably. So what we've been doing this hour, well, so far during the program, we have been talking about bullying. And, you know, bullying has become one of those topics. And, you know, in how do I say this without sounding like a caveman cretin? You couldn't sound like a caveman cretin, you moron. Well, that's probably true. But there was a time when generally accepted behavior was that each of us and our kids needed to experience at least a little bit of bullying in order to understand what the world was truly all about, to learn how to deal with the fact that life ain't easy and life ain't fair, and that learning from a being bullied experience in the long run would do you good. The attitude, however, has changed considerably. Some would say that we've become a more pussified country, but when you hear about teenagers or people in a prepubescent children who have literally killed themselves because of the agony of being bullied, that is clearly something that is not acceptable in the least and something that has to be addressed seriously. I don't think a year goes by we don't hear across the country of half a dozen or a dozen children who end their own lives because of bullying. And that is intolerable. And what makes the bullying worse these days, and frankly, for the past 20 years or so, is the ability of the bullies to take on anonymous identities and spread rumors about you or your children over the internet. And in the old days, like when I was growing up, if somebody wanted to start a rumor about you, it would be a whispering campaign, or maybe they'd pass notes in the classroom or write things on the board before the teacher came in. But now it has taken on an entirely different dimension. And I think the repercussions are far more serious because, let's face it, nothing on the internet ever goes away. And I can only imagine the hurt that can be done to an 8-year-old or a 13-year-old reading some of the more acerbic posts about themselves, especially when they know they're not true, on social media. It's a whole different climate than it used to be. And accordingly, the school districts, typically at the beginning of every school year, will tell parents that they have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to bullying. And my question to you is, in 2019, with your kids, are they following through on zero tolerance? When you have taken a case to your local school, have you found a receptive audience among the teachers and among the administrators? Do you feel as though your complaint was handled seriously? Because they always say it's a situation where the parents have to be involved with the administrators and the teachers in order to resolve a situation. And historically, in other shows over the years I've done on the bullying topic, parents will call in and they have said it's all talk, that they did not receive any satisfaction from the administration. Now, since we haven't had any calls like that today, and granted, this is a non-scientific program, it's a non-scientific poll of what listeners have experienced, I don't know that this is true, but it may be, underscore, may be the idea that perhaps schools are, in fact, taking bullying seriously. So you might have had a situation where you have had to go to your kid's school to complain, and they actually have been receptive, and they have addressed the problem of bullying. But whatever your experience, I would like to know at 803-0930, *930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. But there is another topic that I would like to present to you. And this, I don't know how Phil Kennedy and I got in this conversation, but somehow the idea of what's the closest you ever came to dying came up in conversation. And Phil showed me a picture of a tent he was sharing with 8 other guys, which in itself does raise some questions about Phil. But he showed me a picture of a tent he was sharing with a whole bunch of his friends. And Phil was sound asleep. A torrential, tempestuous storm roared through the area in which Phil and his friends were camping in a tent. A giant tree, literally, next to the tent, toppled on top of the tent, broke through the fabric of the tent, and literally landed, a giant part of the tree. He showed me the picture, landed inches from Phil Kennedy's head. And I will tell you, I'm not a doctor any more than I'm a lawyer, but you don't have to be a brain surgeon to put two and two together. If that tree had hit Phil Kennedy in the head with the force with which it burrowed into the ground and broke through the tent, Phil's head would have looked like something out of the Zapruder film. It would have been like that, okay? It would not have been. Phil Kennedy almost died being crushed to death by a tree. Now, I think a lot of us have stories about the close encounters we have had with not being here any longer. I've certainly told mine enough times on the air that I don't really need to get into it in great detail, other than just for those who don't know, I had a major widowmaker heart attack in December of 2017. And it's a very strange feeling when the doctors are talking to you and they basically say, you had 100% blockage and we don't know why you are still alive. That's a weird feeling. And in the case of Phil Kennedy, it's a weird feeling. It's got to be weird for Phil, knowing that he was inches, and I mean inches away from having his drunken head squashed by a giant tree which came crashing through the tent in which he was camping. It might have been a situation in traffic. It might have been a situation around the house. But have you had a near-death experience? And some of you might actually have been dead, clinically dead, and seen the white light. I'd like to talk to you. And a reminder, we don't have a cash code word in the 5 o'clock hour, so you didn't miss anything. If you get out of work a little bit late and think you missed it, you didn't, because we ain't got one. So have you had an experience that put you closer to death than you ever wanted to be? Did it change you in any way? And for those of you who have been in a serious motor vehicle accident, for example, it is not unusual at all to become a little bit trepidatious about driving. And if you have been involved, let's say, in a head-on collision, you never again take driving on a dark road at night, especially in the country, with oncoming traffic coming right at you. You never view it in the same way again. It's almost like you're always vigilant and you're always on guard, which, of course, you should be, but it can be very, very stressful. All right, let's hear your stories on WBEN. Those of you playing Bowerly Bingo at home, we have had one Deadwood reference, one reference to a truck stop, and one reference to my heart attack. Just in case you're keeping score at home with Bowerly Bingo. Let's go to Beth on a cell phone on WBEN. Beth, welcome.
Yes, hi there. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Okay, good. About 15 years ago, in a house that we don't live in anymore, we had a huge tree that was outside the house. So there was not a garage. There was the wall of the house, the width of a single driveway, and then this enormous tree. So there was a lightning strike that happened in November. It got really cold after a very hot day. It was the very first strike out of the sky. There wasn't any rain. There wasn't any hail. It came out of nowhere, and it struck the tree, and it split the tree, and threw the tree all over the street, hanging from other trees, lit up everybody's houses. It was an enormous lightning strike. And what happened was the wall to the house, well, part of it shot into the living room without actually coming all the way through, but it also busted the wall upstairs away from the ceiling. And what happened was my son, 13-year-old at the time, was sleeping his twin-size bed up against that wall, which was only 15 feet away from where that tree was outside. And my other son and I were downstairs just moments before, and we're sitting on a couch on that wall and decided that we were going to go upstairs. So we left the wall, went upstairs, I put him in his room, the same room, walked out, and within 3 seconds, the lightning struck and busted out that whole wall.
Good.
So we could have been there, could have got all of us.
Are you, looking back on it, were you more concerned that you might have borne the brunt of being electrocuted or being crushed by the wall or both?
Well, there were pictures that flew from the wall that had glass, of course, that broke. I won't lie, it was just right after 9/11, and we didn't know if a bomb had gone off on the street. We didn't know what had happened.
Under the circumstances and in context, that does not sound like tinfoil hat land, believe me. Hold on if you'd like to, because I've got a couple of things I'd like to know about your experience. What is the closest you have come to dying, your near-death experience? And I know that we've got people listening who have been pronounced clinically dead. Tell us your story. A little bit macabre, but the good news is you're still above ground. Well, one of us anyway. It is Bowerly. The other guy's off, you know, serving the country and everything. It is 5:37 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Bowerly and Bellavia, you're stuck with Bowerly. I know. But anyway, we have a couple of things going on WBEN. Number one, we've been talking about it all day. If you have late calls on bullying and whether it was addressed by the school district in question or your experiences with it, I'm totally open to calls like that. But the other question that we just whipped out the 5 o'clock hour is your near-death experience. Now, some people think near-death experience means that basically you were clinically dead and then somehow they shocked you back to life and you saw the white light. And that might very well be the case. I'd love to take calls like that. But other times, it's a situation where, you know, had you just left a minute earlier, bad things would have happened. Or if you hadn't moved from the couch just when you did, the tree in front of your house might have been hit by lightning and your living room wall collapse. And Beth actually had that happen with Beth and her two sons, one of whom was on the couch with her before they moved, and then the other was apparently upstairs sleeping. Beth, are you still with us?
I am.
Was there any danger when those walls started collapsing of the entire house coming down like a deck of cards?
Well, the wall downstairs, it didn't collapse, but a piece of wood, like, shot through it. Like, from the inside, it was definitely, I mean, there was a hole, and there was a piece of wood in the living room. So that kind of catapulted into the wall. And upstairs, the wall came away from the ceiling. The blast moved the wall and busted it from the ceiling. They didn't meet anymore. And my son was sleeping at that wall where, he of course wakes up, and everybody, I mean, my husband, he always found it comfortable with his back. At the end of the night, he always labored in his work and his back would be stiff. So he was asleep on the, well, everybody was going to sleep, right? It was in November and it was early. It was like 8 o'clock. So he was like drifting kind of on the floor. The TV was on. And when this explosion happened, and I got to call it an explosion because that's exactly what it was, no, everybody's ears were ringing and nobody knew what happened. My husband thought the TV blew up. I thought a bomb went off. My son was asleep. He, you know, woke up, didn't know what was happening. My little guy at the time, he's 24 now, my little guy at the time, he didn't know what to think. So luckily, there was glass that came from the wall where my son and I were sitting. So glass shot out.
Mm.
It's true. The TV did not explode. But there were outlets, right, all over the walls in that room. And my husband was laying on the floor. So he did have a racing heart, of course, because of all of the excitement, but we all decided that he would go in an ambulance and that he would go and get checked out because he was in the line of contact, really, from everything that went on in that room because he was laying on the floor.
Oy.
So yeah, we did. We had ourselves quite a scare. And my younger guy, I was telling his school principal about it because it kind of got around that was what would happen. And now I ask him, how do you feel around a thunderstorm? He says, well, I don't like them, but I'm not afraid of them. But the principal asked me, do you think he would do well speaking to the school counselor? And I said, yeah, he probably would. He was about 6 years old. And so she had him draw a picture, and he knew where every outlet was by memory. He knew exactly, more than I would have ever thought. He knew where the TV was, the couches were, every plug and outlet. Anything that was plugged into the outlets, he could recall and remember. And by drawing that all out, and we had to cover up the hole before it was fixed. We had to get a staple gun, and we had to cover it with a sheet, so he didn't see it anymore. I mean, there were a lot of things that we had to do for him that would smooth that over. But I don't know.
Well, it's a traumatic. You guys went through a traumatic experience. And my question to you, Beth, is obviously your kids are all grown up now, but do you have any trepidation when a thunderstorm is in the offing?
No. I love a thunderstorm, but what I would say, because I think that this was an unusual circumstance, but what I would absolutely say is that you do not stand under a tree during a thunderstorm. This tree was so large, and we loved it. Well, I feel bad that it's gone, but we have a picture of some grandchildren, and there's probably about six of them, and the big ones are holding the little ones, but they're kind of all... And they're all standing in front of this tree. It's a total backdrop to the kids.
Wow.
How wide the tree was. And when the lightning struck, it went right from the top right to the ground. And when we took a picture of it, of course, with a regular camera at the time, you had to go get it developed. It took three stages of photographs to catch what had happened right from the ground all the way to the top. So If you are in a thunderstorm, do not stand under a tree.
Words to live by, literally. Beth, I got to get to some other folks. I'm glad you called. I can't imagine how long those repairs must have taken. Hopefully the homeowner's insurance took good care of them. Near-death experience. What happened to you? Could be in traffic. Could be you just keeled over one day. Could be a sporting injury. I mean, these things happen when you least expect it. Here, you might have sucked on your inhaler and forgotten to take the plastic tip off of it, and it got lodged in your windpipe. Not that I would know anybody to whom that happened. Myself. Here is David in Williamsville. David, you're on WBEN. Welcome. What happened to you?
Something happened to me 44 years ago when I was taking the Senate Appropriations Committee to Valdez, Alaska. We were flying in an airplane that could fly quite slow, and we had gone to Valdez the day before and got the lay of the land because it was perfectly clear. But when we went over from Anchorage, from the base there, the next day, it wasn't clear at all. Valdez is at the end of a fjord about 15 miles from the Gulf of Alaska. We let down over the Gulf of Alaska and broke out at about 1,000 feet, and we could see the water. We started in, we knew which fjord to take, and we took the right one. The mountains on either side are at least 2,000 feet until you get into the harbor, and the runway that we were approaching is just at the back, just behind the harbor. As we approached in, we were at 250 feet when we sort of got over the land, but pilots call the clouds when they start falling apart at the bottom and floating around scud. And we had scud below us and a level ceiling above us. The field elevation was 114 feet. The approach book said that there were 75-foot trees on the end of the runway, and we were at 250 feet. So you can see we were about 100 feet off the trees when we came over. we were in the clouds as we came over, and the people in the tower, there are no nav aids to direct you into it at that time, and the people in the tower said, it sounds like you're going by us. The field was only 5,000 feet long, so we broke off. We knew we could go to the right, and we made a circle, and we came back in a little sharper towards a big black spot, which we knew to be the shoulder of a mountain that came down. At that time, we thought about 250 feet from the middle of the runway. As we were making that approach, I was a co-pilot, and we were at about a 30-degree angle to the runway when all of a sudden I saw the wide hash mark, which is the 1,000-foot marker on the field. And I told the pilot, there, Tom. And he immediately turned, pulled the power off. We had the gear down. We had the flaps full. And we broke out immediately, right over the center of the runway. And he landed. It was a little firm, but it was safe.
Well, you would know this better than I, but one of the big problems with flying in Alaska, especially start talking Juneau and Anchorage, is the clouds. The weather can change in an instant, and you were making this landing about 3 years after Hale Boggs and another congressman died because their plane went missing under similar conditions.
That's right. That's right. Well, anyway, we landed. Everything was hunky-dory. Taxied in, they all got off, they did their visit to the terminus of the pipeline, and by the time they got back, it was cleared up perfectly. That's how fast things can change.
Oh, yeah.
So we took off, but I always wondered, because when we landed, we curved around to the right and went over by the tower, which was manned, but there wasn't any nav aids in there to direct you in. So I always wondered how close we really came to that shoulder of that 5,000-foot mountain with midfield.
Wow.
And I went out to the airbase this summer and walked up and went inside. It was still an unmanned tower, so they didn't have any problem. Let me go in. I told them who I was and why I was there. And they said, well, come on. Well, let's go down on the runway, and you can see how close you were. Well, the 1,000-foot marker is about 2,000 feet from where we stopped. And we ended up turning back to the right and came in right in front of the tower. When I walked out there, that shoulder was right there.
Oy.
It was about 200 feet.
And
200 feet, it was 100 feet above the runway. It was very steep.
And with the airspeed, I mean, that's like less than a second.
I calculated it. We were flying at 90 knots, which is about 132 feet per second. The angle we were coming in at 1,000 foot down, we had about 3 seconds, 2.5. To hitting the mountain.
Well, I have to break. I am glad you called, and I'm at the edge of my seat listening to your story. Thank you very much. And if those of you who care to look it up, Hale Boggs, a very famous U.S. congressman way back when, went missing in Alaska just a few years before this guy had that experience. And if you don't know, Hale Boggs was the father of the now late journalist Cokie Roberts. I will tell you what, I'm going to take some more calls, at least one or two more. And we're probably going to do this tomorrow as well, your near-death experiences. Everybody's got a story to tell, and I don't know about you. These are fascinating to me. Here's Sally in Lewiston next up on WBEN, another close encounter with lightning?
Lightning, yes. It was crazy. We lived in a farmhouse in Wilson, and the lightning, you could hear the storm coming, and I was getting ready for work, and my husband and my son were home because they were going to go to Lake Darien Lake. So I was getting ready for work, and I could feel it. I was coming up the steps, and on the landing of the on the landing of these by the stairs, and my son was in the upstairs bedroom and my husband was in our bedroom upstairs. And I could feel like static electricity, like my whole, everything was like staticky. And like the hair on my arms standing up. All of a sudden, boom, the side of our house, right where I was, got hit by the lightning. And we had horsehair plaster. The plaster, everything like blew towards me. And I kind of like just squatted down, put my arms over my head and covering my face. And everything blew. There was a mirror on the wall, just blew. Everything came at me. And then, like, the mirror, the pieces of the mirror were, like, stuck in the other side of the wall. And then the mirror...
That cut, like, is incredible force.
It's crazy. And it cut, like, all my hair. Like it cut, like, my hair. And my husband heard it. He got up, and he was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, I said that I got hit. But I didn't know what I got hit with, of course, at that point. And I was just a bloody mess. And I was trying to call. I called for my son, and he wasn't answering. And he was in a bunk bed up, you know, in the other room. So my husband went flying in there and, you know, looked, and he was fine. So we got out of there because we thought, like, it was going to burn. But it blew a hole right in the upstairs. Blew a big hole, like probably four feet hole. Whoa. And blew all the horsehair plaster, everything, you know. And like I said, all those shards of glass were all, when I came back and looked, they were all in the, you know, in the wall.
What a demonstration of the awesome power of lightning. Sally, I'd love to talk to you some more, and I think we're going to do this again tomorrow because a lot of people want to get on. I'm just not going to have time, but I'd love to hear more from you.
Cold strike will, like, just, it can lift a ocean liner like 6 feet in the air. Okay.
Yeah, I believe it. Sally, I need to run, but again, I'm probably going to whip this out tomorrow and hear some more calls from people. I mean, two lightning calls in like 40 minutes? There used to be, I'm not sure if he's still around, because I believe it or not, even though I'm in the media, I don't really listen to the media a lot. But my friends at 97 Rock used to have a guy working there called Lightning Boy. He was the guy who got hit by lightning out in East Aurora back in the early 1990s. Good guy. It is, yes, I know they're competitors, but they're still friends.